What is going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode of the Freedom Formula. Excited for this episode, but also kind of dangerous. I'll explain why. I'm here with my boy, John Matzner. How's it going, dude?
Doing well. Welcome back. Welcome back to America.
Thank you. Thank you, good sir. So I say it's dangerous because whenever I talk to John, like, he's kind of my kryptonite because I talk to him. I'm like, I'm going to do these five new business ideas, which I've never thought about before, but I'm finally going to do. So it's always kind of dangerous speaking with John, and we'll see what happens on this call as well. Cool. So John, can you tell everyone a little bit of background on, you know, some people probably know you already, but background on who you are, your origins, and then also into what you're doing now.
Sure. So I started my career, I was in the Foreign Service. So I lived and worked abroad, had a lot of fun living in the Middle East and North Africa. Didn't want to do that for a career, and so made my way back to the States and started buying small, difficult, operationally intensive businesses, some more successful than others, and did that with some success, sold, you know, a couple of them, and realized that over the course of that, because of my background working internationally, I'd gotten really good at hiring and using folks from around the world in my companies in really deep, meaningful ways. Mm-hmm. Not just kind of superficial, what I'll call VA type application. And so in the last couple of years, we're kind of searching for a business model that I thought put all the pieces together in terms of taking what I'd learned in using Global Talent in my businesses and applying it more broadly. And so in the last couple of years, I've written a lot online. I've done a lot of advisory work. And then recently have kind of publicly launched something that we call Sagan Passport, which is most simply described as Costco for global talent. And we can get into as much detail as you want on that. But yeah. I found the model that I think is beneficial, cost effective, adds a lot of value, is a little bit different than what everybody else is doing. And it's been growing like a weed.
So what I found fascinating about this journey, John, and like you've now gone public with Sagan and you're launching it, but I've seen like the different iterations over the last couple of years, ever since you and I connected, about like all the different things you're doing. And John, what I think I might have told you this before, and if I didn't, here's a compliment for you. I always love how fast you iterate. Like, I think how fast you move, like you do 10 things by the time I do one or two, right? And I don't mean by activities. I mean, you're like, I tried this out, didn't work, I don't really care, I'm going to go to the next one. Like, you're shipping offers just to kind of see what hits and see what you actually like. I do feel like a lot of people have a fear of launch, myself included, where you want something to be perfect. You're like, if it launches, this is going to be it. I got to go all in on it. And like, I'm sure there's like a pro and cons of like hyper-focusing on one and making it work versus throwing out stuff and kind of seeing what works. But I do admire your ability to do that. Cause for me, it's kind of opposite of how I operate. So I see that, I'm like, dude, that's freaking cool. Like, he just ships stuff and it keeps going. Can you walk me through, like, I don't even know how to ask this question, but your mentality, because I've seen what you've shipped until it's become Sagan and it's been an ongoing iteration. When you try out stuff in your mind, are you like, let me see if it works? Or like, walk me through your mentality when you ship something new.
So the way I think about it is variations on a theme. And what I mean by that is I'm not buying a dumpster company, buying a franchise, import exporting, and starting a staffing company. Everything that I'm doing and shipping quickly is all within a very tight cluster, but they're different spins on either the pricing model, the fulfillment model, the staffing model, whatever it is. And so it makes it look like I'm doing all these different things. But if you really reduce it, I'm using the same primary colors against the same thesis or the same observation about digital operations and automation and AI and global talent. And I'm just trying different ways to kind of chew my way into that problem. And so it looks like I'm doing all these different things, but all I'm really doing is seeing like, what will the market pay for? Where's the perceived value? Where's the operational execution model that I'm really excited about? It's not me having ADD and I'm going to start a restaurant. I'm going to start a cleaning company, trash bans, self-storage. I'm not doing that. If you'll notice, if you look back over the last couple of years, everything I've done is either automation and AI, global talent, and its application to old school businesses. It's just different variations flavors of the same half a dozen tools or, yeah, it's just flavors. I'm not reinventing. It's all what I would call a subsets of digital operations. So with a specific example, one of the things I observed with Global Talent was that people are really bad at writing down SOPs and building their Notion. And so I came up with a way to do that and realized that people wanted that service independent of even hiring Global Talent. And that company spun out to become TeamWiki, which now builds SOPs and operational playbooks for companies. And somebody runs that right now. And I'm still, I co-founded it, but that was just a variation off my exploration of Global Talent. It wasn't like, I've got an idea, let's start an e-com business. Like, it was just an example of finding something that worked and spinning it out.
So John, can you walk me through, let's say TeamWiki, how did you say, let me test this out?
Sure.
Like, I'm going to post it publicly and see what happens. Like, what is your testing and experimentation process?
I think what I do with all of this stuff and pretty much everything I've launched that you've seen, that you've noticed, has been, I built for myself first.
Okay.
So, you know, TeamWiki, I was the first customer because I'm like, I want all of my custom companies to have dope notions that are filled with operationally useful info so that I can scale without a degradation in quality.
Yep.
And I was like, no, that didn't work. Okay, what about this? Oh, that didn't work. And then eventually it got good enough that I could start writing about what I was doing. You know, I commented on some post about TeamWiki saying, oh yeah, I'm starting a little project about building operational documentation. And I got an inbound lead from a $200 million import-export company who's still one of their customers.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, I was just in the comment section be like, yeah, I actually think there's a need for development of operational processes. I might've even had a landing page. Probably not though.
Yeah.
And that was just like, okay, people like are energized by this. Whereas 6 months ago when I commented, I am doing custom swag or whatever it is, nobody got excited about that. So I just didn't even build a landing page for it. Like, nah, yeah, that's fine. You know?
Gotcha.
So I just kind of like, I try to touch the market as quickly as possible to see if people are excited. It's the old Seth Godin, like, ideas who spread win.
Yep.
And so if I tell Neil about an idea and then you never mention it again, you're just being polite and you're like, yeah, it seems like a good idea. But when I mentioned Passport to you, you sent me three messages, including I want to be a customer and what are some other ways to do it? I'm like, ah, okay.
That's I'm onto it.
Figuring out our pricing and creating an LLC. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I just am always kind of like, I'm kind of like hypothesis testing as quickly as possible. And I just let people vote with their dollars. And you're like, no, man, I get this. I love it. I'd be a customer.
Quick testing. Building, you know? I found it. John, with people listening, a lot of times they're newer into entrepreneurship. So let's say you have a background in Global Talent, you know systems, you've done this before, right? With some people who might be listening to this, they might think, well, dude, I'm just getting into entrepreneurship. I'm going to leave my 9-to-5. What are these skills I could test out to actually see what I like? What would you recommend for someone who's just getting into entrepreneurship, who wants to test, like, what do I actually want to do as my first thing?
Interesting question. I think it's the old networking thing, which is go to interesting places, meet interesting people, stay in touch.
Mm.
And I think it's kind of make a habit of getting exposure to ideas and business models and concepts, and then just see where your energy pulls you to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't set out and say, this is the direction I'm going. I just kind of followed my interest and my curiosity and was able to kind of accumulate skills that pushed me down the road, and it didn't feel like work. And, you know, all these different, you know, I got really good at using an assistant because I wanted to spend more time with my family. Like, it pulled, it was like a pulling effect. And so I think getting exposure to different ways of doing business, different models, and then just seeing, like, what can I not stop thinking about? What would I do if I didn't make money on it? What would I do for 3 years and only pay myself a couple $1,000 a month and be happy about it? Rather than, like, what did some dude do a thread on Twitter? And, oh my God, it looks so easy. Because that's never fucking easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. And I would say, like, John, like, your passion is around systems optimizations, efficiencies, AI, like you geek out on that kind of stuff. If someone's like, well, my passion is soccer, like I wouldn't say exactly follow your passion, but follow your passion as it relates to things which can be also useful for other people. And I think one nugget you dropped in here for a lot of people would be look at what you're already spending money on and doing. And that's probably something other people are going to spend money on as well. Now, it could be on a business thing. Like you're like, hey, I made this Team Wiki thing and people need it. This is a big type of business thing. Or it could be simple as, hey, I spend money on the home cleaning service. I already know people are going to spend money on this. I know how it works. Let me try to launch something like that. Or I've just spent money on repairing my gutter. Or I just spent money to get this X, Y, and Z service done. You already know people are in the market for this. It's already been validated for you. And that's already where you're putting your intention and time. You could also just spin it up into your own thing. I think that's very easy ways of coming up with ideas. I totally agree. Looking for the easiest business model is the worst possible move. And if it's easy, it's not going to be scalable. It's not going to be sustainable. So it just depends what you're looking for. But I think a lot of the answers are already in your backyard or you're already doing as well.
It's funny, Neil, that you mentioned, though, what you said I'm interested in. I'm actually a sales guy. I'm a sales guy. I taught myself systems and AI because I want to build leverage. But Peter Lohman, a systems engineer and electrical engineer, is a way better systems guy than I am. I just did it because it was like, picture who you want to be and then become who you need to become. And I realized that I needed to become a systems guy in order to build the leverage that I wanted to live and own the kinds of things that I wanted in a way that I wanted to. And so I'm cosplaying as a systems guy. I'm like, you know what I mean? I was a freaking international relations major. I'm not like an engineer. Right? I'm just pretending to be one because I was like, I need to develop this skill set in order to do what I want to do. Okay, fine. Then I'm going to learn Facebook ads. Okay, then I'm going to learn building SOPs. Then I'm just like, I was taught in a previous career. It was like, be yourself. And if that doesn't work, be somebody else. And so it was like, what do I need to be right now? Well, I need to be a sales guy. Well, I need to be an ops guy. Well, I need to be a cheerleader. I need to be a financier, whatever it is. Just like, I try to have a dynamic, a dynamic picture of myself that I'm not constrained by a particular challenge. It's just like, well, what do I need to be right now? I need to be a fundraiser. Okay. How do you fundraise? All right, let's go fucking figure it out. Like that's for me, it's like an empowering mindset, whether it's true or not. I don't know, but
I think it is. I mean, people silo themselves into an identity. I am not an early riser. I'm a night person. I am an ideas guy, not an executor, like whatever it is. And my big example is look at the guy who runs Ukraine. I'm blanking on the guy's name. The war general now. He was Zelensky? A freaking comedian. Yeah. He was a comedian, like you're an actor. About Zelensky, yeah. Like he was never meant to be a war general, but now he's a war general, right? Like identity can be fluid based off the situation needed and what you actually want to do. I think it's something that people pigeonhole themselves into by not realizing that enough.
I also, you know, when I talk about my early, I wonder if you have an example of this, Neil, as well. And it's actually been a bit of a challenge for me, and I'm getting better at it, which was when I was first getting started, I was who I had to be in order to first get started was I would describe myself as a counterpuncher, meaning anything that anybody gave me, they gave me a spark. And I could say, absolutely, Neil, I'd be happy to build your website for you. Absolutely, we can make it 1 a.m. Whatever you gave me, because I didn't have enough opportunities, I had to learn how to jujitsu that and turn that into an opportunity or a relationship or a retweet or whatever, because the world wasn't giving me income. And one of the biggest transitions that I've had to make in the last year, which is I don't need to be a counterpuncher anymore. I have more opportunities. I don't need to worry about one match being used and that being my only match. I have a bonfire and I've had to learn how to create boundaries because what it took to get me here is very different than what it's going to take to get me to the next level. And if I remain a counterpuncher, then I'm going to end up talking to my Philippines-based staff at 9 at night. And it's like, they work for me. Why the fuck am I talking to them at 9 at night?
Yeah.
Right. And so I've learned that as well.
Yeah. I think that shifts over time. And I think it's a good transition because I do want to talk about Sagan because I'm actually fascinated about this. So you went all in on right now, Sagan Passport. And like, I will describe it for you, like you describe it as a Costco for remote talent. From my understanding from the outside, it's very much that, but like, I've always thought the recruitment agency model is completely broken. And if for anyone listening, recruitment agency means someone says, hey, I'm going to find you a Filipino-based remote team member or Latin America or South African, whatever. And you pay me a placement fee and then they're yours, right? For me, just because we've recruited enough, I'm like, I could post a job ad and get 100 applicants who are highly qualified. Why would I pay you a $2,000 placement fee? It makes no sense. It's been a very broken model. Everyone and their mom, I feel like, has a remote team talent agency now. So what Sagan's doing, it does have that end on top of it, but can you walk me through like all of the back end stuff? Like, you guys could do white glove headhunting. That's one piece of it, but there's a lot of other stuff you've layered on top of that or below that, which actually make it a lot more attractive. Can you walk everyone through what it is in Sagan?
Sure. So I think of it as a suite of hard benefits and soft benefits. So there's kind of like three hard benefits and then a bunch of soft benefits. Mm-hmm. So the hard benefits right up front are the kind of custom recruiting, meaning yeah. Neil needs a left-handed JavaScript coder who speaks Portuguese. We have a team of recruiters from around the world. We're very much indexed on non-Philippines talent right now. If you want Philippines talent, just go to onlinejobs.ph.
Yeah.
It is a developed ecosystem. Do not pay somebody $3,000 for the love of God. We still do it, but it's just, yeah. There's not a ton of perceived value. However, in places like Africa or Argentina or Mexico or Jamaica or Belize, it is not as consolidated of a market. And so we have recruiters on the ground. We have partnerships with social media influencers. We have whatever, right? We did a TikTok live with a Kenyan the other day and we got like 200 applicants and we got like 10 great candidates out, right? But it takes that level of focus. And if you're going to hire three people over the next year, Neil doesn't have time for that crap, right?
Right.
So that's the kind of first hard benefit. And we do a bunch of those and those are included with membership. The second thing we do is we call it our candidate pool. And you saw, a lot of people saw an early version of this idea, which was text for talent, which mm-hmm. is we are hiring so many different people that oftentimes Neil says, I need a CSR. You hire one, but we got three others that we've already interviewed. We've already incurred the cost. They're awesome. And if we don't get them a job right now, they're going to go get another job.
Right.
And so what we do for our members is we take all of those extra candidates and we put them in our candidate pool and they are free to hire in unlimited quantities by our members. Now, what's good about that is, they're available right away. The salary's pre-negotiated. It's like the buffet.
Yeah.
Over time, my suspicion is that 95% of our members' hiring needs are going to be met out of our candidate pool.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have such volume ripping through the candidate pool that Neil's just going to pull up the database and write CSR. And in the last 3 days, he'll see the interviews, resumes, screening project of four different CSRs and he'll just grab them. He doesn't need to go through a recruiter. He doesn't need to pay me anything. It's just like, oh yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
Like done. You just have one interview with them the next day and then you hire them direct, right?
Yeah.
That's the second benefit. The third is hard benefit is the vendor network. So if you've, I imagine you've Upwork or Fiverr, right? Neil,
right.
Spent a small fortune on those platforms.
Yep.
They're kind of a pain in the ass, especially more recently in that the signal to noise can be a little off.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got these vendors that we've used before or our members have used before. So it's like, hey, I need somebody to build me a great landing page. If I put landing page builder on Upwork, I'm going to spend the next 3 weeks banging my head against a wall, trying to figure out somebody who's half decent.
Yep.
We have a good landing page guy. He's in Slovakia. He's $500 a landing page. You just go to that section of our membership. You just hire him. You pay him directly. Mm. And it's like, thanks. You just saved me a buttload of brain damage.
Yeah.
So and that's for like part-time projects or project-based work.
One-off
like,
type stuff.
I just need somebody to do 15 hours of automation work for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need 15 hours of automation. My go high level's not something right. You don't need to hire somebody. And going through Upwork is kind of sporadic. They mark up the labor.
Yeah.
Like, so we'll have this vendor now. So those are the three hard benefits. The soft benefits are all about the art of global talent. And what I mean by that is there's three people that we see need a lot of support in a company using global talent, the owner, the manager, and then the global talent.
Mm-hmm.
And so for each of those three categories, we have a community where people ask questions So we just had somebody asking about, do I need to send these people laptops? How are you guys thinking about personally identifiable implication? What soft phones are you using that work well in Colombia?
Okay.
Like all that kind of stuff. How do you guys, are you guys using time trackers? What are you guys using? Additionally, with the global talent, they have a lot of questions too. Neil asked me to do something that doesn't make sense. What do you guys think I should do? And instead of sending Neil a message, they ask each other. And then we do workshops and office hours. So last week, for the global talent? Stanford Justin, Stanford GSP Justin?
I don't think I do. Okay.
He bought a Evermore. He writes a lot about off-market deal sourcing. Ran a search fund, did a big acquisition, and he built his whole RevOps team, B2B RevOps, LinkedIn, off the back of some of my playbooks and global talent. So he did a workshop last week for all the owners that are members talking about how we did it. And for you, you're like, dude, I want to learn. Like, I want to learn how to use Philippines-based people to get me great candidates for Made This. And then my passport can staff it. And I've already got the, like, you know, we did one last week on how to use ChatGPT better for global talent. Because they don't use it well. They all use it like shit. How do you write a good prompt? So it's like, it's these continuing education things all around the art and science of global talent.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I think if I just charge it as a mastermind or mastermind, as I like to call it, it's worth the cost. But then we also do all this hard benefit recruiting stuff because I didn't want to just have like an info product. I actually wanted to deliver some services. So it's like there are people signing up who are like, I just want it for the soft stuff. And there are people signing up, I just want it for the hard stuff. And my goal is that people join for both reasons because they're both so valuable.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I feel like people would find different values in it. For me, if I looked at it, like the white glove recruiting, like, like that's okay. But that global talent pool, the buffet, that's way more attractive to me because sometimes you just want to hire someone direct. I don't want to go through the recruiter and be like, what do you think about these candidates? I don't like them. Like,
it's fast.
Yes. Yeah, that's more interesting for me. But other people might like the training, might like the white glove type of service. So it's interesting how it's the combo. John, who is this for?
Yeah. And for us, Neil, I'll just close. I'll close that point. Yeah. The reason why the big trade for us is Costco. You come from a finance background, is that we trade you the firm commitment of membership, net negative working capital, and then everything we do for you is free or at cost. And that's the trade. So I'm committing you to global talent at $1,000 a month. It's not if you feel like it. It's not if somebody gives you a better. So my exchange is I get this really high quality annual recurrent revenue source. But then in exchange for you, just like with Costco, you go, man, nobody's even close to these. These are 80% less expensive than my other option.
Yep.
Maybe more, 90%. But it's a marker of a great business, which is I'm going, I can't believe Neil's buying this. And Neil's going, I can't believe they're selling this. And it's like, ha.
Yeah.
Aha, great business.
Exactly.
So that's a great business. Cool. It's not like, oh my God, I have to plug my nose and spend $6,000 on recruiting fees. Like nobody wants to do that.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best summary of what we're talking about at the beginning is like, how does someone do identify good business model and what to do? It's where both sides say, aha, I'm getting a deal. That's how you know this is a win-win and it works for everyone, right? No one should feel like, damn, I have to spend money on this. They're like, yeah, this is a solid deal. That's what both sides should be feeling. And I think that's the best way to find an incredible business opportunity to dive into.
But you know this. It took me 2 years. It took me 2 years because I, 2 years ago, I was, it's why I started writing on Twitter and writing my newsletter is because I was working on my thinking. I was like, why aren't people hiring more global talent? Why should I just do a staffing agency? Should I just do a headhunting agency that does Latin America only? Like what is it? And it took me 2 years to find a value proposition that somebody who's educated and smart like you is happy to pay for. And I'm happy to service that business. And I'm not like an agency. Like, you know, dude, I'm too old and been too successful to run an agency. No, thanks. No, thanks. You know, so it took me 2 years though. It took a lot of hard work.
Yeah. John, if people want to know more about Sagan, about you, where can they follow you and where can they learn more about Sagan?
Yeah. So Sagan Passport is the website. You can also just find me on Twitter at Matt Snurjohn. I answer all my own DMs and stuff like that. it's what I would say is, it is a really, really good fit if you're planning on, it's really easy if you're planning on hiring two or more people from non-Philippines this year. Like, then it's just like, it's a lay down. I think it's worth it even if you're not, but just from a dollars to cents, our wholesale like pricing, the break-even analysis, or if you're hiring people more expensive than like $1,000 a month, because then the break-even is like one hire versus we hired a comptroller for somebody from Colombia who is $3,500 a month. That would have been a $12,000 headhunting fee for one hire.
Yeah.
Because of their annual comp.
Yeah. Break-even makes sense very, very quickly when you're doing global talent.
Definitely. Exactly.
Cool. Well, John, thanks so much for hopping on, dude. And I will post the link to John's Twitter as well as his website in the show notes. That's pretty much it, man. Until next time.
Godspeed.